Now we're holding on page 100 in Sanhedrin, the last paragraph labeled Daf Ayin Dalad, middle of Ois Kufir Dalad, towards the end of Ois Kufir Dalad. The Gemara, the end of this parak talks about the middle from the middle of this parak onward. It talks about the dinim of a roidif, and when you kill a roidif in order to save the would be victim, and when not. And so naturally enough, that gets into a discussion of when a person themselves is required to go al kiddush Hashem. For example, one of the cases where you save a victim from a roidif is a Naira HaMairosa, which is the case of Arias. So that naturally enough leads into the point that Arias is one of the big three that Yehoreg Val Yaver. So the Gemara has a whole sugya on the ins and outs of Yehoreg Val Yaver, and in the end, the Gemara gets to the following question. Bo minei mirab Ami. They asked Rab Ami, Ben Noyach, mitzvah al kedushas Hashem, or yeinu mitzvah al kedushas Hashem. A Yid we're talking about has a mitzvah of kiddush Hashem, and the Gemara has gone through the details of what's included in that and what's not. What about the Goy? Ben Noyach had that mitzvah. So, in other words, he has sheva mitzvahs, after all. One of them is Avodah Zarah, let's say. Let's say people are forcing him to worship Avodah Zarah. We know what he did. No question, Yehoreg Val Yaver. But what about that Goy? Would the same thing apply? Or in a mitzvah, or does he not have that mitzvah? Amar Abaya, Abaya says, Toshma, well, we can prove. Earlier in the Masechta, we learned about all about the seven mitzvahs, and we said the Zion mitzvahs and Stabu B'nei Noach, that B'nei Noach were given seven mitzvahs. Now, B'imisa, if you're going to tell me they have a mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, can they have, and then they have eight mitzvahs, and we know it's only seven. So therefore, Mela, in other words, you could say, let's say, we know that, for example, Arayas includes a lot of sub-things. There's six different Arayas that are also to B'nei Noach, and we know with many of their other mitzvahs also, we can break them down. But if we have a specific mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, and that can't really be under any of the other seven on the face of it. It has to be an eighth one, and it's not. Therefore, Abaye says that would seem to prove that they don't have this mitzvah. However, what? We know there's supposed to be seven because earlier in the sugya we had a sugya about it that we learned a couple of weeks ago in Ein Yaakov, which is in the Gemara on Daf Nun Vav Nun Zayin, says that there's sheva mitzvahs shenitzavu b'nei Noach. Okay, there were certain Tanoim who held that are more, but the consensus is that in the end there are seven. Amalei Rava, however, Rava says that's not really a proof. Because you could say when they have the seven, inhu v'chol abizrayu. It includes the seven plus all of abizrayu. So anything that's shayach to it, it actually translates the word abizrayu with a French word that means basically anything that pertains to them. You look in Rashi, tur appartement or something like that, which is distantly related to the English word appertain. So anything that pertains to them, anything that has a shayachus to them. The Oruch gives a different translation. He says abizrayu is related to a word that means spices. So it means like when you have a cooked dish and you have the main ingredients of it, and then you have the spices that give it flavor. So the same way abizrayu would be like the secondary things. Either way, in other words, the point is, Rava says no. When you say sheva mitzvahs, it means anything that is an outgrowth of that. So therefore, no, you won't say that Kiddush Hashem is a specific eighth mitzvah of theirs, but you're going to say that an outgrowth of the mitzvah for them to not worship Avodah Zarah is maybe that if somebody tries to force them, then they have to go al Kiddush Hashem and not do that, and the same thing with all the others. So no proof from the fact that it's not considered a separate mitzvah. Bechlal, again, there's seven. When you break them down, come out to a lot more mitzvahs anyway, and yet we count them as seven. Okay. So the Gemara says, "My havi halacha." Okay, what's the bottom line? What's the halacha? Is it goy mitzvah al kiddush Hashem or not? Omer of Adaba Ava. So Rav Adaba Ava says, "Amri beirav." Well, they say in the yeshiva that we can prove it from the following story. Ksiv. You have the Sefer Melachim. You have the story of Naaman and Arami general who had saras. It's after Parshas Tazria, and he goes to he has a Jewish girl whose army had previously kidnapped from Eretz Yisrael and is working in his household. She tells her mistress, who in turn is Naaman's wife, who in turn tells him that you should go to the Navi in Eretz Yisrael, Elisha, and he'll be able to cure you. So sure enough, the Naaman comes, and Elisha tells him, go dip in the Yarden. And at first he's angry, how you talking, with just dipping in a river, there's plenty of rivers where I come from. Akitzer, his servants and hangers-on convince him to go ahead with it. Sure enough, he's cured. He comes back to Elisha overjoyed, and he offers him money. Elisha doesn't want whatever. Anyway, so Naaman says, you know what? I'm going to become a ger toshev. I'm no longer going to worship. I'm accepting on myself. I'm no longer going to worship Avodah Zarah. But what? Except for, well, here's where it comes in our Gemara. So now he says like this. He says to Elisha, regarding this matter, though, Hashem should please forgive your servant, meaning me. And when my master, the king of Aram, comes to Beis Rimmon, which was the temple of Avodah Zarah, where he's going to bow there to his geshke, and he's leaning on my arm, then of necessity I'm going to have to bow also because I can't openly show that I renounce this geshke. So now he says that Hashem should forgive me for that. And the pasuk says, Elisha tells him, go in peace. Now, he doesn't tell him, no, that's no good. You're going to have to be ready to go Al-Kiddush Hashem or something like that. So, V'im Issa, if in fact a goy is mitzvah Al-Kiddush Hashem, loy lemalei, then how could he tell him, loich l'sholem? So, Rashi explains mele to give him teuchacha. Fine, teuchacha only applies between Jews. So, he wouldn't be obligated to give him teuchacha. But how could he tell him, loich l'sholem, as in implying, fine, what you're going to do, go gizm to hate and do that? If in fact it was also to him, wouldn't that demonstrate that in fact a goy is not mitzvah al kiddush Hashem? So yes, if Naaman were to willingly bow to Rimon, then it would be also for him as a ben noyach. But if he's doing it unwillingly, just because he has to put on a front in front of the king, then Elisha seems to be telling him it's not a problem. But the Gemara says that's not really a proof, because you could distinguish, as the Gemara did before by Jews as well, between sina and parhesia, between in private versus in public. Earlier in the Sugya about Jews, the Gemara had established that there's a difference between that sometimes you have a higher standard of Kiddush Hashem, but parhesia when it's in public, defined as when it's in front of or with the knowledge of at least 10 Jews. Then you have, there are cases where, there are certain cases where a person would be able to be over an Aveira when it was the Tzina, when he's being forced to, but when it's B'Fahesia, then he's obligated to go Al Kiddush Hashem. Well, in this base Rimon, in this temple of Rimon, there aren't going to be 10 Jews over there. There's not even going to be any one Jew, hopefully. So therefore, it's not considered B'Fahesia. And therefore, so when Elisha is telling him, go Gizun to hate, Leich L'Sholem, maybe only because it's Betzina. Had it been Bepahesia, had it been in a place where there were in fact 10 Jews, then maybe Naaman couldn't tell him, then maybe Elisha couldn't tell him that go Leich L'Sholem. He would tell him you have to go on Maseiros Nefesh. So therefore it comes out, in other words, there's no real proof from that one way or the other. With that said, though, there are different Rishonim who have different gersois and different understandings in the Gemara. Tosfos, in fact, discusses over here and says, listen, whenever the Gemara says, my havyalo, what's the bottom line, what's the story with this, it means the Gemara is going to give us an actual conclusion. So not like, so how do we have over here? Then it ends up, according to Rashi's girsa, according to the girsa we have in front of us, we have no conclusion in the end. So Tosfos brings a different girsa, and many other Rishonim agree to it. And that in fact the answer is that that it's slightly differently. The im isa, if it was so, then Elisha should tell Naaman that there's a difference between sinna and pahesia, and the fact that he doesn't tell him that implies that even before hesia, a goy is in fact not mitzvah al kiddush Hashem. And this is indeed how the Rambam paskins that if a goy is being forced to violate any of his sheva mitzvahs, then he can do it, and there's no problem, as we learn from the story of Naaman. With that said, there's an interesting idea that Mishnah Lamelach says in a sefer Parshas Zerachim that maybe there's a difference in this regard between Shvichus Damim and the other ones. He says maybe for Shvichus Damim, actually a Ben Noach would be required to give up his life rather than doing it. And he explains because there's a difference between Avodah Zarah and Gilui Arayis versus Shvichus Damim. The Gemara explains, we learn a logical thing, who says that your blood is sweeter and more important than the other guys, and maybe that concept would apply even to a Ben Noach. So the Maskana was saying, according to the Rambam and many other Rishonim, that in fact he's not mitzvah al kiddush Hashem, and therefore he wouldn't be punishable. No, the fact is, even a yid who is mitzvah al kiddush Hashem, if he goes and does the Aveira, he's not chayiv misa or malchus or anything for that, because it wasn't oinus. He was just, he committed chilul Hashem, which is a very serious Aveira. But by a goy, in the end, so according to Rashi over here, according to Rashi's Girsa, was saying we don't really come to any conclusion. Maybe he's mitzvah al kiddush Hashem, maybe not. Somebody's showing him have the Girsa that, in fact, there would be a difference for a ben noyach between the tzina and the fahesia. And then according to the Girsa of Tosfos and the Rambam, there's nothing at all. A goy is never mitzvah al kiddush Hashem, and he can always violate it. Again, with this idea of the parashas Zerachim that maybe Shvichus Damim is different. There's the safer... What? So this would, so according to everybody, it would apply to all of them, and according to the Parshas Zerachim, with the exception of Shvichos Damim. There's a long piece of, actually, over here in the Gemara. There's a sefer that I mentioned a number of times in this shiur called Binyan Shloima, a sefer of Chidushim on Masechta Sanhedrin. The author was a Dayan in Rosh Hashiva in Frankfurt, and a distant relative of mine, Reb Nosson Maz, his name was. So he has a whole long pilpul of about a page and a half on this whole point of what exactly, according to that, a ben noach is and isn't mitzvah. Fine. So now the Gemara finishes off this discussion of Kiddush Hashem with the following sin and the fact that a person has to be moisen nefesh and not do it with the following story. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav. It happened once that there was a certain man who put his eyes on a certain woman. He had the eyes for her. He was attracted to her. The hell of libertina, and his heart got full of tina. So Rashi says, like, tina literally means mud. It's like he was so lovesick, like now he felt like his heart is stuffed up, and he became sick. So bo v'shalu the roifim. So they came to ask the doctors, what can we do for him? Omru, so the doctor said, well, there's nothing that you can do for him. There's no way he's going to be cured unless she has relations with him. Omru Chachamim, the Chacham said, no. Yomus Falti Boiloi, better let him die rather than she'd have relations with him. What was the story? What was her story? Was she as Ashish ish? Or Pnuya, the Gemara will take up in a few lines after we finish the actual story. Okay. So the doctor said, Tamid Lafanav Aruma. Fine, let her at least stand in front of him undressed. Maybe that'll quell his taiva. No, the Chacham said, Yomus Fal Tamud Lefon of Aruma, better let him die than even she should stand like that in front of him undressed. The Oruch HaNer, by the way, points out, you know, you get down to it already, the fact here the Chacham are first saying, Ein Loi Takona Shetiboil Loi, and now all of a sudden they're changing and saying, you know what, maybe it doesn't need to boil Loi, maybe it's enough Tamud Lefon of Aruma, so that's a lone reason for the Chachamim to say, you know what, these doctors evidently don't know what they're talking about. With that said, Ion Yaakov says maybe not. Maybe this is not the doctors themselves. They're not going to contradict themselves. Maybe the Gemara is saying that even if the doctor, we're not saying that they actually proposed this to the doctors, but rather that even if they had, and even if the doctors had said, Tam in the fun of Aroma, etc., still the Chacham would have said nothing doing. Okay. Another one they tried to sap him in Achor HaGeder. Fine, let her at least talk to him from behind a fence. He won't even see her, but at least he'll hear her voice. No, the Chacham said, Yomus Fal Tasapu Imam Achor HaGeder, let him die rather than she should talk with him even from behind a fence. This is an example, by the way, of the Abizrayu we were talking about before. We said that you have Arayu, Gilei Arayu, is one of the big three, that Yehoreg Val Yaver, and now we're saying this is an example of Abizrayu, of an outgrowth of that, because having relations with her could be, as the Gemara is going to say, if she was an Eish HaSish, then obviously that's Gilei Arayu. The other ones, not necessarily, but there will, and especially as the Gemara is going to say, maybe she was a Pnuya, but this is an example of Abizrayu. Then Yehoyada points out, wait a minute, what would be the good of her talking with him from behind a fence? If he can't even see her, why would the doctors even think that would help? So he says, maybe the doctors are proposing, fine, let her get undressed and stand behind the fence. He won't see her, but he'll know that she's standing there without clothes behind the fence. Maybe that alone will have an effect on his taiva to calm it down. And the Chum say nothing doing. Okay. So what was the story with this woman? Pligiba Rab Yaakov Rab Idi Rab Shmuel Bar Nechemya Bar Nachmeni. So Rab Yaakov Rab Idi and of Shmuel ben Achemya, ben Achmeni argue, what was the situation over here in the first place? Chad oma eshes ish hoisa, v'chad oma pnuya hoisa. One says this woman that this guy had this taiva for was an eshes ish, and the other one says she was a pnuya, she was an unmarried woman. Well, the shleimelam and oma eshes ish hoisa, well, it's very well if we say that she was a married woman, shaper, then we understand this would be actual outright Gilead Ayas for him to have relations with her, and even the other things, fine, you can argue as Abizrayu of that for her to stand in front of him undressed, etc. Elul Mandoma Pnuya Hoysa, but if she's a Pnuya, then there's not really such an issue involved. My Kulahai, what's the big deal? Why don't they just allow him to have relations with her? True, it's an issue. Now whether it would be an issue Daraisa actually is an interesting question. The Rambam holds that any time that a man and woman have relations outside of marriage, then it's an issue of Loya Kodesh and Loya Kadesha, and they would actually get Malchus for it. The David disagrees, actually, and says that no, that would only be if she's Loisiyah Kadesha is only if she's Mufkeres Lesnus, and the whole thing of the problem of a Kadesha would only be like if they're living together as boyfriend and girlfriend or whatever. So according to the Rambam, but even according to the Rambam, it's only an Isur Lav. And surely, Pikuach Nefesh, on the face of it, ought to be Doichada, and according to the Ravid, it may not even be that. So why weren't the Chachamim allowing it if she's a Pnuya? So the Gemara gives two reasons. Amar Papa Mishum Pgam Mishpacha. One reason Rav Papa is because of the Pgam to the family. It'll be a huge embarrassment to the family. It would mean that their sister or daughter or whatever, however she's related to the various members of her family, is going to be treated like this. So Rav Acha Breidav Ikam are different interesting explanations. There's a rare sefer of pirush on Ein Yaakov called Mitzudas David. It's not the same as the Mitzudas David on Tanakh, where he says the Pagan Mishpacha may be the man himself, maybe a mamzer or something. So in that case, then it would actually make her it would actually create a pagam in her in the future as far as marriage. So that's a reason why not. Anyway, Rav Acha Breidav Rav Ika Amar Kadesh Shelo Yub Bnei Sisera Prutas Barayis. Rav Acha Breidav Rav Ika says the reason is because you don't want Jewish women to be loose with Arayis. In other words, that it should be that women are going to appear in front of men, and the men are going to have a taiva for them, and then they're going to give themselves over for beer. We don't want to start with such things. Now, there are, by the way, there was a big machlokas rishonim, whether, in other words, as the Gemara is saying over here, that literally this is considered, even if she's a penuria, it is literally considered abizrayu de gilei arayas, and therefore he actually, as a matter of actual halacha, he's required to be moser nefesh rather than anything like this happening. There are a number of Rishonim who learn that way. That again, this is, we're saying that a person that has to have a desire to gilar ayis and shvichas damim, and we're saying that includes abizrayu. So a number of Rishonim learn that it means it includes this as well. Others say that no, it's a little bit different over here. He brought this on himself. Who told him to look at this woman and get such a taiva in his heart in the first place that now he's dangerously ill? So he brought himself to this situation. Therefore, we're not going to give him any break. Mashenkin, in other words, if it hadn't been such a situation, if he hadn't brought it on himself, then maybe in fact the chachamim might have allowed it. So you have these two reasons, Pagam Mishpacha and Shaloya Prutis Barayas. We first should talk about a couple of nafkaminas between them. For one thing, what if she's willing to be moichel on it? Well, she can be moichel. The family can't be moichel, especially Ben Yehoyada points out, and the family is going to include children who may not even be old enough to be moichel yet. They can't be moichel on that, and if they're going to say they're moichel, then they're stam being foolish about it, and we can't accept that. Another point might be, let's say this guy is actually related to her somehow, not close enough for it to be an actual erva, but close enough that he's part of the same extended mishpacha. If you say mishum pagam mishpacha, look, there's going to be a pagam either way. Either she's going to have relations with him or stand in front of him undressed, etc. Or the guy's going to die of his illness, and then people are going to say about that family. You know, in this family there was Plony who died because of this. So either way, you're going to have the same pagam mishpacha. Whereas if you say that it's a matter of Shalom Yubnei Yisrael, Prutas Marayas, then that kind of thing doesn't matter. We talked about, by the way, we talked about earlier in the Masechta an interesting idea that Rav Nissim Goyen brings, that the person in this story may be identical with, we learned earlier in the Masechta, there was one of the Rosh Galusa named Ukvan, also known as Nosim de Tzitzitza, who also had a tremendous taiva. There's a similar story about him. He had an enormous taiva for a woman, and he finally controlled himself, even when he would have had an opportunity to do it. She comes to him she's desperate for a loan, and he would have had the opportunity to do something with her, and he held himself back. And from then on, there was a fire, there was a light, min hashamayim, that hovered over his head whenever he went anywhere. So sort of Nissim Goyen says this is actually the same person from the story, in which case it would mean that he actually didn't die in the end. In the end, he was able to recover without that by putting a total lid on his Yetzer Hara, and for that he got the special light over his head.
Story happened first.
Obviously, the story must have happened first. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara asks, "Valinsava Minsav." Okay. So why doesn't he just marry her? He marries her, then he can have relations with her, and that avoids the whole problem. So again, Mela, if she's a married woman, then you don't have that option. But if she's a Pnuya, it's a normal thing. A couple gets married and they have relations. So there's no so for a character, it won't be an aveir. Rashi points out, it'll be a mitzvah. And the answer is lo miyas v'daite. That won't be enough to calm him down. It won't heal him. That won't cure him. to Rabbi Yitzchak. And the reason is based on what Rabbi Yitzchak says. Dom Rabbi Yitzchak, Miyem Shechara Beis HaMikdash, ever since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Nitla Tam Bia, the taste, the excitement, the flavor of bia has been taken away. The nitna over avera, and it was given only those who do avera, those who are doing arayas. Now, why is that? Rashi says because like this, miyam shachara beis mikdash. People are full of worries. Nobody has the mindset to have such a taiva for his wife. So people go ahead and do it, but they don't have as much of a taiva and as much of a tam as they did before. As opposed to the oivra avera, the yetzahara gets the better of them and increases their taiva. That's Rashi. Marsha points out, as it is, you don't even need that. At the end of Sota, it talks about the flavor of the fruits and of all kinds of other things was taken away when the Beis Mikdash was destroyed. So then this flavor, this tam, was also taken away. There's a toast that sells in Bava Basra that says it doesn't literally mean that it was given to the Ovra Avera, especially the Gemara is going to bring now a pasuk from Mishlei to back us up. And Mishlei was written when the Beis Mikdash was standing. What it means is that up and before, when the Beis Mikdash was standing, everybody had Tam Bia. Now, after the Churban, it's taken away from everybody else and it's left intact by the Ovra Avera. So therefore they have a stronger taiva and a stronger tam than everybody else. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Mayim Gnuvim Yimtiku, stolen water is a sweet. So water is water, it doesn't have a taste to it. Nevertheless, when a person knows that it's stolen, then it gives it an extra flavor to him because there's an extra excitement of something that's also. The lechem Sarim Yinam, and bread that's eaten in secret is sweet, which Rashi points out that bread is a euphemism for having relations, like we find by Patifar Kima Lechem Ashahu Oichel. Now, the pasuk itself, again, is written when the Beis Mikdash is standing, but the point is, in other words, even when the Beis Mikdash was standing, there was this idea that that people who do Averis, they feel an extra excitement from the fact this is... What?
Where's the
Averis? Secret is the Averis? Well, in other words, Rashi is explaining, means a euphemism for having relations when he's not supposed to. Lechem is a euphemism for a man's wife and having relations with her. So therefore, when he does that in secret, like he has to hide out because it's something illicit, it's something that's usur, and then yinam, it feels sweet to him. He gets that extra cheshek for it. So the vort is, in other words, that even when the Beis Mikdash was standing, the point is that the Yetzirah always made things look better for people. And now we're saying after the Churban, then again, that most people have lost that time and only the Ovra Avera have it. So therefore, in other words, for him to marry her is not going to help. You have Lamal Yusa, of course. You have, for example, the famous story involving the Alter Rebbe and Avraham the Malach, when they would be learning Kabbalah and Chassidus together, then the Alter Rebbe would turn back the clocks of the clock hands, and Avraham wouldn't realize because he's mushed from the world, and therefore he's stealing more time for that. And the Alter Rebbe later on said that there's the mind Gnuvim Yimtiku. That part was especially sweet to have that extra time for that. Okay. Mishnayos Midos now. We are beginning the fifth perek. The Mishnah says, now that we talked about at the end of the previous perek, the dimensions of the Heichel, now it's time to talk about the dimensions of the Azorah as a whole. So the Ezras Noshim we already did, the Harabayas we already dealt with in Perek Beis, the Ezras Noshim we already dealt with, the size of that. Now we said before briefly that the Azorah was the size of the Azorah. Now we're going to break down where everything was located in it. So the Mishnah says, Kol ha'azara ha'isa orech me'or shmeinim v'sheva, al reich me'or shloshim v'chomesh. The entire Azara from Shaar Nikanor until the back wall over here was 187 amos long and 135 amos wide. Based on the figures that the Mishnah is going to give, it seems that doesn't include the thickness of the actual walls themselves. So we're talking about just the floor space. So how do we break it down? Starting in a Mizruch Amayra Kufay Zayin, going from east to west, you've got 187, and it's as follows. Mokum Jurisus Ragli Yisrael Yud Aleph Amma, the Ezra Yisrael where Yisraelim can go in, there is 11 Amos wide. As we learned before, if there's not enough room there, if there's a lot of Yisraelim, then the Teferes Yisrael points out that they could actually go around the edges over here as well, but basically the 11 Amos strip over here was their space. Then the Kohenim also have an 11 amah wide space, which is even when they're not doing the Avodah, they can be located over there. Hamizbeach Shloshim Ushtayim, next you have the Mizbeach, takes up 32 amahs. meaning, as we learned before, the greatest length, the greatest dimension of the yesod was 32 amas, because as we said, you have one amma over here, then you have 30 amas width to the mizbeach, and it sticks out one amma over here. So there's another 32. So far we've got 11 and 20 and 32 makes 54. Bein ulam lamizbeach esu mishtayim. Then you have 22 amas between the ulam, between the front entrance of the heichal and the mizbeach, which that area has a higher level of kedusha, as we talked about a few days ago. So that's another 22 amas. So it comes out basically, in other words, you can think of it, the mizbeach is centered on an east-west line between the front of the heichal and shaar nikano. You have 22 amas over here and 22 amas over here, and then the mizbeach itself takes up 32. Hechel, it says on the side explicitly, Kuf Amma, the Hechel itself, as we learned before, is 100 Amas long, so far that gives us 176. The Achas Esther Amma, Achor, the Beis HaKaparis, and then you have 11 Amas behind the Beis HaKaparis and 11 Amma wide space over here. So that makes up the whole 187. Minatsofen Mishnah Beis, Minatsofen Ladorah Meir Shloshim Bechamish, then from north to south is 135 Amas, as follows. But here we're not going to go in order. Here we're going to go out of order. We're going to talk about the major things that were there, and then we'll see how they were all laid out and what space there was between them. Starting with Minakevesh from Mizbeach Shishim Ushtayim. Between the Kevesh and the Mizbeach was 62 Amos. The Mizbeach itself, we said, was 32 Amos. The Kevesh was also 32 Amos, but the Kevesh overhung the Mizbeach by 2 Amos. So therefore, so you don't have 32 plus 32. You have 32 plus 32 minus 2, and that gives you 62. So the whole floor space taken up by them is 62 amas. Mizbeach v'taboris shmona amas. Then you have a space of 8 amas between the mizbeach and the beginning of the taboris, the rings over here that we learned before that they put the head or the feet of the animal in when they shecht. Mokam v'taboris esrim v'arba. The taboris themselves took up 24 amas. So you were wondering the other day, Menachem, then how they fit the animals. The picture over here is showing them too close together, really. In reality, we're saying the whole space took, it was 24 amas. So we learned before, it's either 6 rows of 4 or 4 rows of 6. Either way, then that means there's quite a few amas between one and the next. Next, then between the rings and the tables, which we said before, there were marble tables over there on which they would cut apart they would skin the animals hanging from the hooks, and then they'd put them on the tables and cut them apart and wash out the kishkas and everything. So there's 4 amas between the taboris in there. Then you have 4 amas between the shulchan, between the tables and the nanosin, the low pillars that we said over there. They had wooden blocks on top of, which is where there were hooks to hang up the korbanos and skin them. Now, Mefoshim explained, when we say between the shulchanos and the nanosin arba, it doesn't actually mean there's 4 amas between them. The shulchanos are supposed to be, we said before, between the nanosin. It means the total amount of space that they took up was 4 amas. Then you have from the edge of the nanosin until the nearest wall is 8 amas. So far we've accounted for 110 amas. The moiser, the remainder, is bein akevesh lakoisel and mokam ananosin. The remainder is the area between the end of the kevesh and the southern wall, and the area of the nanosin themselves takes up the remaining 25 amas. Now you have a machlokus in a number of places in Shas. Everybody agrees, as we said, the Mizbeach on an east-west line was here, centered, but on a north-south line, there's a machlokas in a number of places in Shas, whether it was here we have it drawn the way the Rambam holds, which is that most of it is in the southern half of the Azara, but you have a few amas of it that stick into the northern half. So altogether, the Azara is 135 amas wide, meaning half of it would be 67 and a half amas. The Rambam holds that the place from the edge of the Mizbeach until the wall is 60 and a half amas. So according to him, 7 amas of it are in the north and the rest of it is in the south. You have several different opinions in the Gemara. You have an opinion that it was exactly centered. You have an opinion that it was all in the north, meaning only the Kevesh stuck out into the southern half. And you have an opinion that it was all in the south, meaning that none of it stuck out into the northern half. So according to those, then you would have to move it around here, and you'd have to move around the Taboris and the Nanosin and all that a little bit in order to accommodate according to the different opinions. And the Forshim, in fact, deal with where exactly the Rambam gets his shita, given that it doesn't agree with any of the Tanoim that I mentioned in those sugyas and zvachim. One explanation is, since the Mishnah says after we left with 25 amas, and it says that it's for the between the kevesh and the wall and the mokam ananosin, then the Rambam is going to explain that each of those is 12 and a half. You take the 25, split it in half, and give 12 and a half for the nanosin and 12 and a half for the space here. No, there would be. It would just have to be a little more crowded. That's all. You wouldn't have, for example, 8 amos. You wouldn't have 8 amos between the. You wouldn't have 8 amos between the mizbeach and the taboris, for example. But everybody agrees that all these things, all these pieces of furniture, were there. The machlokas is just exactly how to fit them in into the space that's available. On top of that, also, you have a machlokas in a few places in the Gemara, which we've talked about before. What is considered sofarin as far as the shchita? Is it davka, the area immediately north of the Mizbeach, the area that's shaded over here, or is it also this area over here, or is it also that plus this area over here? The Rambam passes like that third shita, so according to that, they have a much larger area to shech. So conceivably, according to some of those opinions, you might have that maybe the taboris were spread out a little further, or the shulchanos and all that were spread out a little further, and they don't dafka have to be due north of the mizbeach. Mishnah Gimel. Sheish l'shochas hayubah azara. There were 6 chambers in the azara. Now, besides which we've learned before, you had 2 over here on the 2 sides of the Shaar Nikaner, and you had the 4 small ones here in the Shaar, in the Beis HaMoked. Now we're talking about 6 freestanding ones. Shalosh batzofen b'shalosh vadorim. 3 on the north and 3 on the south. Shabbat Sofen, the ones that are on the north, are as follows. Lushkas HaMelach. First of all, now here in this diagram over here, they show them actually as being on the south, because the Gemara actually discusses, there's a Gemara in Yuma that discusses, and on the side over here it brings different Gersois, that it may have been flipped around. The Mishnah over here is saying 3 on the north and 3 on the south, and identifying the 3 on the north and 3 on the south, but the Gemara explains there in Yuma that it actually may have been flipped around, and the 3 that we have in front of them, in front of us, and the Mishnah is saying that it was in the north, may have been in the south, and vice versa. So Shabbat Sofen, Lishkas HaMelach, first of all, you have the chamber of salt, which is where they would keep the salt for salting the Karbonos. Lishkas HaParva, then you have the chamber of Parva. So there's a few different explanations why it was called Parva. The Gemara in Yuma says that Parva was an Amgusha, was a magician. So there's a lot of different explanations, then why would he have a room named in the Bais HaMikdash for him? Some say he built it, some say he built it then only after he did Tshuva, because they certainly wouldn't allow a Rosh, a magician, to build a chamber in the Bais HaMikdash. In fact, there's an interesting explanation from Rav Lev Yitzchak, that of his father, that talks about that then that represents an ultimate example of his Hatcha, that a Rosh like that becomes a Tzaddik and builds a chamber in the Bais HaMikdash that's named for him. Yeshayim Tiferes Yisrael says an interesting idea. We're going to say that there was a mikvah on top of it, and so Tiferes Yisrael says the plumbing for that mikvah was built so, this parva built it so ingeniously that people thought it was magic. Anyway, that's one explanation. Then there's a different explanation that Amnon brings, and a number of other Mephoroshim bring, that Parva tried to tunnel under the Bais HaMikdash because he wanted to sneak in and be able to see and watch the Kohen Gadol during the Avodah. But they caught him in this place, and they killed him, and then later on, they built a room over there called Beis HaParva. According to that, he may have been a Yid, he may have been a Goy. He doesn't say one way or the other. But in any case, he has no business tunneling under the Bais HaMikdash and sneaking up to watch the Avodah. And according to that, they killed him, and later on, they named the room after him. Then the Roman Foreshim will point out that the word parva can also mean a skin of an animal, so it can also be that they kept the skins that are of a certain korbanos that go to the kohenim, they would keep them in that room. So there's that. And then lishka samadichin, and then you have the chamber of the washers, which is where they would wash the korbanos. Where they would wash the kishkis of the animal. They have to clean out all the filth and all the everything in it before they can offer them on the mizbeach or eat them, depending on what's to be done with the particular kishkis. So those are the 3. So what are they? Lishkas HaMelach Shamayu Nosin Melach LaKarban. So the Mishnah defines for us. In the Lishkas HaMelach, they would place the salt to Karbanos. Lishkas HaParvah Shamayu Mochin Oris Kodshim. In Lishkas HaParvah, they would salt the skins of the Kodshim, because if you don't salt a skin, it's going to rot. So like this, they wanted to give them to the Kohenim, so they had to salt them in order to preserve them. On top of Beis HaPayavah was a mikveh where the Kohen Gadol would tovel on Yom Kippur. He had to tovel in the Kodesh, in the area that has full Kedusha, so therefore he had to tovel in a mikveh that's actually located in the Azara, unlike the Mishnah tells us in Yuma. The first time he toveled, he could tovel over here, which is outside the Azara and doesn't have the full Kedusha. But the other four have to be in the Azara, but Mokum Kodesh, so then this was where it was. Lishka Samadichin, and Lishka Samadichin was so called Shasham HaMadichin. Kirvei HaKodshim, they wash over there the innards of the Kodshim, clean out all the filth and everything. Umishram, Misiba, Oil, Gagbeis HaParavah, and from there was a winding staircase to go up to the roof of the Beis HaParavah, where again the Kohen Gadol would tovel over there. So those are those three. So again, our Mishnah places them on the north, but this diagram places them on the south, and the Gemara in Yuma says it may have been that way. Okay. As far as the skins, by the way, Reb Levi, of course, has a very interesting explanation. He says the Kohen, you have two different, we know there are two different major classes of korbanos, Kodshed Kodshim and Kodshim Kalim. So he says the Kohen would take the skins of the Kodshed Kodshim and use them to make Tfilin Shor Rosh. And then they would use the skins of the Kodshim Kalim to make Tfilin Shor Yad. Mishnah Dalet, Shabbat Dorim, then you have the three chambers that were on the south, and again, in this diagram, they're shown in the north. Lishkasa Eitz, the first one is Lishkasa Eitz, the chamber of the wood. The second one is Lishkasa Goyla, the chamber of the Goyla, and again, the Mishnah is going to define what each of them was. Lishkasa Gozis, and the third one is Lishkasa Gozis, the chamber of Gozis means cut and shaped stones. So let's go through what they were. Lishkasa Eitz. What was the purpose of the Lishkasa Eitz? Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov shachachti mahusim shameshes. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, I forgot what it was used for, as we had before. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is the Tana of Oz, who composed Or Masechta. So here, and in an earlier place in Perek Beis, he says he forgot a particular detail. Abba Shol explains, Lishkas Kohen Gadol Hoysa. This was the chamber of the Kohen Gadol for a week before Yom Kippur, and also for a week before he prepares the Parah Adumah. The Kohen Gadol has to stay in the Bais HaMikdash and be 100% tar. The Gemara and Yuma learns it from Psukim. So therefore, so he would stay in this chamber. It was also called Lishkas Palhedrin, the Gemara explains in Yuma, because Palhedrin means officials who were replaced every year, as during the time of the second Bais HaMikdash, often the Kohen Gadol were. So it was called Lishkas Eitz. Why was it called Lishkasa Eitz? Some say it was made out of wood, and that gets into the question, you're not allowed to build with wood inside the Azara. Some say it was not attached to the ground, therefore it's mutter. Some say it was paneled with wood, or roofed with wood. Some say it was called Lishkasa Eitz because they stored wood over there, or as a siman, that the Kohen Gadol should have a long tenure, like a tree, an eitz, lives a long time. So there's a lot of different explanations why it was called Lishkasa Eitz. And Abba Shaul continues, Hoysa Achodesh Shtehen, it was behind the other two, the Gag Shloshed and Shava, and all three of them had a common roof. The Kohen Gadol's Lishka and the other two that were listening to me. Lishkas HaGoyla was so called, Shamhoyer Bur Kavua, there was a water pit over there, a permanent water pit over there, Vagagal Nothin Olive, and there was a water wheel above it to be able to draw water, or Meshama, speak in mind, Machal Azara, that was where they supplied water for the Azara. For example, again, they needed to wash the Kishkis, they needed water for that, so they would use that, and they'd use water for the various other things that they used in the Azara. Why is it called Lishkas HaGoyla? Some of the Foshim say because the Bnei HaGoyla, the Yidden who came to build the second Beis HaMikdash, built that. Others say that the word is not goyla, but gula, which means a basin, because there was a large basin above it to draw water. Anyway, so that was the second one. Lishkas HaGozis, then the third one is Lishkas HaGozis. Sham Hoysa Sanhedrin Gdola Shal Yisrael Yosheves. The Sanhedrin Gdola of 71 of the Jewish people would sit over there. So it was called Lishkas HaGozis. Some say, in fact, it was built out of carved cut stones out of honor for the Sanhedrin. Others say the word Gozis means to cut. So it's also like you have the word Psak Din, or you have Lachta Chesedin, an expression in the Gemara, which literally means to cut the din, and therefore they call it Lishkas HaGozis because that's where the Sanhedrin cuts and decides the halacha. Anyway, so the Sanhedrin Gdola would sit over there, the Donah Sakohuna, and they would judge the Kohuna. Now, of course, they did many things. The Sanhedrin had a whole lot of things to do for the Jewish people. What we're talking about on a day-to-day basis, this was a regular thing that they would do, is judge any prospective Kohenim who are coming to do the Avodah. The Kohen Shinimtsa by Psul, so they would have to check out a Kohen as far as his Yuchsin and as far as Mumin. So if they found that the Kohen had it was possible, if it was possible because of Yichus, that is, then he would put on black clothes and wrap himself back in black clothes, which is a simon of mourning, and he would leave. That's it. He's not going to serve in the Mishmikdash. If, by the way, it was found possible because of a mum, then it's not so bad. As we learned before, you have the Lishkas Dira Eitzim over here, where they would keep the wood and check it for worms, and the Kohen who are bali mum could do that. That's not an avodah, so therefore they could do that. They're also entitled to portions of that day's kodshim that were brought by the base of that they belonged to. But here we're talking about if he was found possible in his yichus. If when they checked out the Kohen's yichus, they did not find a psul, loivish levonim, then he would put on white clothes, or misatif levonim, and robe himself in white. He would put on. So first of all, I mean, eventually he's going to put on the big dikahuna, but even the point is, even before he's actually putting on the big dikahuna, he would dress in white and robe himself in white as a simon of joy. And then he could go into the Beis Mikdash and serve together with his fellow Kohenim. The yomtiv, and they would make a yomtiv when they found no psul in the descendants of Aaron HaKohen, meaning in particular, Mephoshim explained, where if there was a day when they checked out the yichus of the Kohenim, and there was not one who was possul, then they would make that day a special yomtiv. And they would say in celebration at that, Baruch Hamokim Baruchu, blessed is Hashem, blessed is He, Shalonim Se Psul Bzara Shal Aaron, that there was no psul found in the descendants of Aaron, or Baruchu, and blessed is Hashem, Shabocha Ba'aron of Avonav, that He chose Aaron and His sons, Lamed, the Shoras Lifnei Hashem, to stand and serve in front of Hashem, Beveis Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, because of course any Kohen could in principle become the Kohen Gadol. And he would get to serve in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and therefore, so now they would bench Hashem that now we found that all the Kohenim are roi for that, and they can all serve Hashem at the ultimate level in the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
Is there a number for how many people were in each mishmor?
Not that I know of. We do know that as far as Botei Ov, there's different opinions whether there were six or seven, and there's even Brises that suggests that maybe there were fewer or many or more in some mishmaras. So no, I don't think it specifically says one way or the other.
It could be that every mishmar there was new Kohanim that never even served.
There definitely were, because, for example, the Mishnah tells us in Yuma, it was a couple of days ago in Rambam Shlosha Prakim, that, for example, when they made the pious to see who's going to bring the Ketoras, they would only invite only anybody who has never yet brought Ketoras in their lifetime, because Ketoras has a sedula to make a person rich, the Gemara explains, and therefore they wanted to give everybody a shot at that. So only if, as the Rambam describes, if everybody had already brought, then they would open up the pious to everybody. But yeah, you could see that the Pashtos on an ongoing basis, you did have new Kohen that are coming all the time. First of all, ones that grew up now and are old enough to do the Avodah. And second of all, the Pashtos also have people who came from different other places around the country, and they didn't usually have a chance to come. And now, for the first time, they have the chance to come and serve in the Beis Mikdash. Hadron Allah Masech Midas. Maybe this should help that we should see the actual third Beis Mikdash Miyad Mamish. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Ugola.
See you.
I suppose we could. Hayom Yom Zayin Menachemov. La'osid lavoi, we're going to be made tahor with the ashes of the 10th part Adumma, which is going to be done under the supervision of Melech HaMashiach, and there will also be included in it, as is supposed to be with every part Adumma, from the ashes of the original part that was done under Moshe Rabbeinu's supervision, and then there'll be also in it all the ones from all the parts that were made throughout the generations, as in fact the Mishnah in Parta tells us is supposed to be done, because that stresses the point that our Geula also includes with it, and it depends on it, the Geula of all the generations that preceded us. Continuing on this topic of talis and tefillin, so the rosh, we talked about which one you put on first and coming to shul with talis and tefillin, etc. The rosh used to start saying birkas hashachar. He would get to the bracha otu yisrael b'sifara, then he would put on tefillin, and then he would say that bracha that way. Primarily otu yisrael b'sifara. The Gemara explains is when a person puts on his hat. But like this, the rosh would all do this. Also, this way, he's also praising Hashem for the tefillin. Tefillin are called pe'er, as Hashem tells Yechezkel, pe'ercha chavoy shalacha, that even at a time, there was a time Yechezkel's wife passed away, and Hashem told him he has to not prava avelos as normal in order to show the Jewish people, etc. And Hashem tells him, wear your pe'er, which means wear your tefillin. From the attack we learn that an oval doesn't wear tefillin. And this is also why coming up, if it has to be that we have to do the Santisha B'Av, then also we don't wear tefillin in the morning for much the same reason. Again, because we have Afro instead of Pe'er, only in the afternoon when already we have the footsteps of Mashiach are growing louder, then we put on tefillin for Mincha on Tisha B'Av. And Onan doesn't pronounce Phil, and that's true. And, well, it's an Ovo on the first day, right? So basically it means on the day of Aninus, right? But Tisha B'Av afternoon already, we say the Avelus is already starting to lessen, and we're starting to feel the footsteps and the smell and everything of Mashiach, and therefore we do in fact put on Phil and Ben Menachah.